And back for another week of Tony Talk right here on Scoops with DannyMac.com. Our chance to talk to the Hall of Fame manager, Tony La Russa. And I was going to say, how's your day going? But I learned as a reporter, never ask Tony. When did that start where you would say, ask me in about 3 hours or ask me at 10 o'clock? Was that the early days for Tony?
Yeah, I think it probably started about the time I started managing the major leagues. And you realize that, I mean, it's a real simple occupation. It's so complicated to make the simple work, but the simple is it's your team against their team. There's a score. So once you win a game or you lose a game, the night's over. You know, your mood is totally dictated by the outcome of the game. So if somebody asks me, hey, how you doing? I just don't know because, I mean, other than health and something going right or wrong with the family, I mean, that's priority. But as far as the occupation, man, you know, win a game, good day. Lose a game, bad day. So I hate to say, hey, man, everything's great, and you go out there and play like a chump.
I've wanted to ask you, too, working with the Red Sox and your friend Dave Dombrowski, we know that's a rabid fan base there, and you're coming off a World Series, slow start for the Sox, but give me an idea, just the difference in the fan base. I mean, they live and die with their team just like they did in St. Louis, but give me maybe something that's unique or the different vibe you get up there.
I remember the Jack Buck pulled me aside when I first got there in 96, and he tried to explain that, you know, passion. I had seen passion before. You know, in the American League, you go into places like Boston, for example. You're in the National League, you go into Philadelphia or any of the New York teams, and, you know, Cubs in the National League. So passion was not something that was only something for the Cardinals fans or for the Red Sox fans. It happened other places, but he explained that the difference was that the Cardinal fans, if they felt like you were trying your best because they treated you like family, they were with you win or lose. And every place else, it was win or tie. And, I've kind of seen that at times. But in Boston, what I saw for the year was they're more patient than that. You know, I think that trying hard is still the most important thing to a fan with passion. If he thinks that you're doing it well, he knows you're a man, not a machine. But for sure, I think every player, anybody in uniform would like to compete when there's a real active and passionate fan base. And if you do poorly and they get upset, that's okay. It's better if they care.
Is it hard for you not to be nostalgic? When you go into a Fenway Park, it was a tough World Series with the Cards in 04, but you also won some big playoff series with Oakland. I mean, when you're in a building like that, which just reeks of nostalgia, any part of you reflect when you're in that building?
Well, all the time. I mean, it's one of the pluses and minuses, but more plus and minus of having experience, because I can remember coming into Fenway as a young manager with the White Sox when they were much better than we were. And you go in there for 3 days, especially those day games on Saturday and Sunday when the wind blowing out and had all those guys could launch it over the monster. You know, if you happen to have a lead in the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning, man, you're really hoping against hope that you can get the three outs you need in each inning and have a victory. So then with the Oakland days, you know, we had a couple of tremendous successes there, and that was the 88 and the 90 ALCS, where we actually started both series best of seven in Boston, and we swept the first two games, and then we swept the two at home. So the initial Boston playoff experience was great. You know, two playoffs, win two championship series, but then that they got even with us in 04. Because after working so hard to finally get into the World Series in St. Louis, to go in there and get swept, that's the worst thing that can happen. I mean, because it looks like you weren't competitive, and anything you try to explain sounds like an excuse. But we lost Cart that time in September, and by the time we got there, you know, Matt Moe and Woody, Pat, those guys, you know, their arms were just, they were hanging. I mean, they just didn't have a whole lot of bullets left, and so it really wasn't a fair competition. But my point is that had some good times with the A's, and 04 was not a great experience, but being with them last year, just watching really great baseball being played was something that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, I think the 04, the disappointment was that was such a good team. I mean, you won 105 games too. And you shake it off, of course, you come back the next year, you're good again, you win two World Series, you know, down the road. But I would think that offseason, I know how much you take those losses, just the way that season ended, because it was such a great team, that probably stung for a while.
Well, it stung mostly because of the sweep. It just sounds like you were 105 games. Don't know how. You must have been lucky. Must have done it with with mirrors in the American League Mission 4. But you know, I'll give you one little behind the scenes things for all the folks that are paying attention to our conversations. In Boston and Fenway, there's about three different places, but one especially from when you're upstairs in the baseball ops office, as you go up to the box where ops watches the games, there's a picture in the hallway, the stairway, excuse me, that is taken prior to game one of the 2004 World Series. So on the first base side, you see, you know, Terry Francona and all the Red Sox. On the left side, you see myself and the St. Louis Cardinals. And the thing that always strikes me, because it's, you know, they're standing next to us in order of the lineup. And when you look at the lineup that we had, you know, it was Renteria was first, Larry Walker second. There was Albert. Then it was Scott Rowland, Jimmy Edmonds. Then I think it was Reggie Sanders. And then we had, you know, Mike was a catcher, so Taguchi. Womack. Womack was a second base, and so Taguchi was a left fielder. I mean, that is just no wonder we won 105 games on the offensive side. That was a great offensive team. And we just got shut down by, you know, Curt Schilling and Pedro Martinez. But I always give credit to Curtis Due. When you get outplayed, you tip your cap to the Red Sox. But what really bothered me the most was that we didn't, you know, we had to represent with a couple of wins at least, and we didn't do that.
It's Tony Talk. It is presented by our great sponsors, Triad Bank, located in Frontenac. TriadBanking.com is their website. And also Marie Davila Senior Living, located at the corner of Clayton and Wideman Road. And also Greenville University, less than an hour from St. Louis, a renowned university at greenville.edu. All right, Tony, I told you we had great reviews last week. And of course, now we're both paranoid, right? That's like a first inning where you do well. That means nothing. It means we got to put up a crooked number this week, okay?
As long as we talk baseball and it's involving the, you know, Cardinals and whoever else, I think we're going to be okay.
And that's where I want to go with this, because it's a recent headline. Christian Yelich has just been destroying Cardinal pitching. And I started thinking about the debates, and I'm sure we talked about it and the media debated with you about when Barry Bonds was at his heyday. You have that kind of balance where, hey, I don't want this guy to beat us because he's so good. You don't want to be stupid about it, but you also have a little machismo and like, hey, we can get a guy out. Remind me how you approach the Barry Bonds thing. And with Yelich right now, I think fans are going crazy saying, just walk him. What are you doing? Walk the guy. What are you doing? Give me an idea where that falls for a manager, that type of decision.
As far back as I can remember, when I was mentored, one of the best was Sparky Anderson. And when he talked about, as a manager, putting your club in a position to win, one of the situations he talked about was when the other team had a really outstanding threat and how you tried the best to avoid letting him beat you. And in fact, it would have a negative effect if in that series, you know, he really didn't come through with the big hits, because a lot of times it creates momentum for the other hitters to be more productive. So I can remember one time when he was with Detroit and McGuire was with the A's, and McGuire was hot, and he went right by him, bang, and says, hey, big fella, don't even bring a bat to the plate because you're never going to use it. But what we ended up doing was, you know, rather than he's just a plain intentional walk, and here's what I think, you know, something the fans might enjoy. Under Dave Duncan's tutelage, you know, we really, I think, emphasized and mastered the unintentional intentional walk, where we had a sign when we came up to a situation where the big threat. And sometimes it could be the eighth place hitter with two outs and men in scoring position in the National League. And if you could get the eighth place hitter out, then the pitcher would lead off next inning. So this strategy had other uses. But the big one was, you know, how do you nullify the big threat on the other side? And if you just, you know, if you just make it real obvious you're not going to throw them a strike, well, you know, that it seems so non-competitive, especially when the pitching coach and the manager, you know, you're talking about compete. We can beat anybody anytime. And Dave would always say to the pitchers, there isn't one hitter in this league that you can't get out one time. So if you take that kind of attitude, then why are we pitching around him? Well, because sometimes the guy is such a threat, you had just to be careful. So we had this sign for the unintentional intention, which meant that, you know, I'd give the sign to the catcher. Catcher had a way of letting the pitcher know. And then we would sit right off the corner or right on the corner and throw the ball right. If the guy had to reach for it, then it would be hard to make really good contact. If you missed, then in effect, he would take a walk. Well, Barry Bonds has said many times that the team that challenged him the most during his heyday was the St. Louis Cardinals, because that's kind of what Dave preached. But we were, you know, we tried to avoid throwing the ball right down the middle. where, you know, he was going to hurt us. We tried to pitch to the edges, in and out, up and down. But in the end, you know, discretion is a better part of valor. And if you have to walk a guy, you do. So I'm gonna, here's a quick story, which is so true. And it's one of my favorites. We always would discuss this in spring training. We had our pitchers in this case, it's strategy. So I would do the explaining, and I had the pitchers in there while my day was out with the catchers someplace and the rest of the position players. And I've got them together, and I'm explaining that there are going to be some situations where we're going to give the sign where you don't give in to the hitter. And sure enough, boy, that was when we had Matty Moe and Woody Williams, and these guys are all, you know, roosters out there. You know, they can get anybody out, you know, Warriors. And I don't really like that, too. I mean, I don't want to be disrespectful, but you know, Duncan keeps saying we can get anybody out. And now you're telling us that there's some, but we're going to not go after the guy. I don't agree with that. And sure enough, I could not be more honest about this. I had noticed in the back of the locker room, Bob Gibson, the all-time great Warrior, was listening to this. And, you know, they were being respectful. They kept saying, well, you know, this doesn't fit. We want to go after guys. And I kept saying, look, there's a strategy here, and I'm in charge of strategy. And, you know, I got the office, you got the locker. So if I'm going to do it, but, you know, you want to have buy-in. And I said, Bob, you've been listening to this. What do you think? And right away I thought to myself, you know, not that I'm a lawyer, but, I mean, I did have some law school training. You never ask a question that you don't know the answer to. And I thought, oh, Bob's going to come up here and just tell me that I'm stupid and foolish. And Bob says, Tony, just look at these pictures. You got to be kidding me. He says, you're going to tell me that all the years that I faced Hank Aaron, they had a guy named Joe Adcock on deck. If there was ever a big situation, I threw the ball on the edges, just like Tony was talking about. If he wanted to enlarge his strike zone and hit it weakly, let him. But if not, he took a walk and I'd go after Adcock. Yeah, you got to be smart. It's not a question of being, you can be brave and stupid, but it ought to be smart and be a winner. That's a true story. And the guys all went, yes, sir, Mr. Gibson, we got it.
They're like, hey, what you said, Tony, yeah, that was fine and all. But when he said it, okay, now we listen. All, you said, oh, I got the office, you got the locker. How many times do you think you actually, do you ever say that to a player?
Oh, I mean, you use it all the time. I mean, because, you know, you're all, as, you know, you're a communicator. I did the same thing for our coaching staff. And, you know, we're communicators. But at the end, players play and the coaches and the managers, you know, you manage and you coach, right? So there are sometimes you can have a disagreement about some particular fundamental, some particular strategy, some particular whatever it is, and that you want to communicate it and you want to be respectful, so you explain. It's just like when I hit the pitcher eighth one time, right? I explained it to the guys, and there are some guys, well, I don't understand. I don't know. I wouldn't do that. I said, fine. Here's my explanation. If you still don't agree, well, in the end, I have the office. You have the locker. You guys play, and the coaches and I will – try to put you in position to win. So it wasn't that unusual.
All right, we're going to come back and get the questions from the listeners right here on Tony Talk. We'll do that next. One of our great sponsors on Tony Talk, Triad Bank, the neighborhood friendly bank located in Frontenac on Clayton Road. They're just west of Lindbergh. Real easy access off Highway 64. Get to Lindbergh and you are there. Founded in 2005, wide range of commercial and personal banking services. And how about this? They actually have people behind the counter, people there ready to greet you, ready to help you. Business owners looking to expand, talk to the bank based in St. Louis. Those decisions are being made here. How frustrating is that? You're trying to get a loan for your business and the decision is made in New York or Los Angeles, not with Triad Bank. You can find out more at triadbanking.com. Home equity lines of credit, 5-star rated bank, $360 million in assets. Check them out, triadbanking.com. Greenville University, experiences delivered. Students and alumni are making an impact on the community and engaging around the world. Founded in 1892, the 50-acre campus is less than an hour from St. Louis. Undergraduate, graduate, online opportunities, engineering, music, biology, physics, philosophy, digital media. The degree possibilities are endless. Faith and community are pillars of their learning process, spiritual formation woven into the academic and extracurricular programs. 99% of students eligible for some form of financial assistance. In fact, Greenville grants $28 million in scholarships and financial assistance each year. Students from all across the globe. You can find out more at greenville.edu. Since 1960, serving the families of St. Louis, Marie Davila Senior Living. At the corner of Clayton and Wideman Road, the beautiful fountain greets you for the 22-acre campus. Full range of senior living. Independent living at the Villa Estate. Skilled nursing, memory care. They have it all. Spacious dining room, salon, transportation around town, exercise and pool, private rooms, hands-on care. You're not a resident at Marita Villa, you are considered a guest. Fred and Mary Kay Weezahan and their sons live on site. It is family run and it has that family feel. You've heard Tony and I talk about how this was home for the legendary Red Shandings for many years. He was also on the board and helped the original owners start Marita Villa back in 1960. MaritaVilla.com. We suggest you go online and schedule a tour. And a reminder, you can email us, TonyTalkQuestions@gmail.com. TonyTalkQuestions@gmail.com. And let's be honest, Tony, you prefer their questions over mine 9 times out of 10.
What about 10 out of 10?
I assume that. All right, somebody wanted to know your take on the Rick Ankiel comeback. I know he got derailed a little bit by injury, but I sarcastically said last year when the lefties weren't getting people out, I'll take Ankiel tomorrow over some of our options. I don't know what you've heard from him, but is there a chance he could still do it?
The first time I heard it last year, I immediately called him and was totally supportive and honestly said, if you get your arm in shape, I'm with the Red Sox now, and I guarantee that we'll get you a look. If he can get healthy, I do believe that it's entirely possible, and he would be really a force in left-hand relief more than as a starter, because I think that would be more fair and healthier for him. So, in fact, I checked back with him later, earlier this year. I said, where's it going? He said, well, I kind of going, but I had to get some surgery. I want to make sure that I get healthy and I'm not, right, I'm not yet. So my point is that I definitely believe that if he can get healthy, he would be a major force as a reliever. And I think people would be lined up to sign him. And the last time that I saw him, he was an outfielder. And I used to watch him play long toss, whether he was with Washington or Atlanta or even when he was with us. And you guys could be like 250 feet, 200 feet away, and Rick would just flip it. And the ball was just like it was being carried on the air, man. This guy had unbelievable arm, unbelievable carry. And the thought of him being a pitcher again, and the way he explained it, by the way, is, his a little bit like Tiger Woods winning the Masters, and his kids had never experienced him as a golfer. Well, Rick's kids have never seen him pitch, and he wants them to experience it, and I think it's definitely something that I encourage.
Well, it's amazing. We could do a whole show on Rick Ankiel and the incredible career. I know he's even talked about it being a movie at some point. We'll do that 1 week. Somebody else said, what about Tony's battles with Dusty? And those were great. Cards-Cubs rivalry, it would get heated. And I think, did he play for you back in the day? But at times it was a little tense.
Well, good question. And, I knew him, when I was still in uniform. Towards the end of my career, I ran across Dusty. Dusty was with the Braves, and in fact, I was with the, I signed Kansas City in the 60s, and they became the Oakland A's. I got traded in 71 August from the Oakland A's to the Atlanta Braves, and the great good fortune for 6 weeks to watch Hank Aaron in person. And Dusty was a member of the Braves at that time. That's when I first met him. And, I certainly respected. I mean, he had really special talent, had a great playing career. And then as coincidence, ironic as it could be, when I got fired by the White Sox in June, Duncan and I got fired, we got rehired by the A's. And on the A's ball club in 1986, in that June, was Dusty Baker. And one of the reasons that we pulled that together, they had a bad record, but they had some real good team leaders like Carney Lansford and Dusty, for example. Stu was there, but he had just started to get his feet wet. So that was last year of Dusty's career. And we resumed our friendship relationship. And then when it was over, we brought in Reggie Jackson as the DH for 87. So Dusty was not going to be offering anything. And at the time, he said, look, I think my knees are, I think I'm done. But I think I'd like to try it again. And sure enough, during the winter, he tried it and decided he was going to pass. And I regretted at the time that I did not stay on top of it, because I'd love to have him join our coaching staff. But he joined the Giants, and we stayed close friends. And, it was easier when we were in different leagues or in different divisions. I mean, when I was in St. Louis and he was in San Francisco. But, once you get into the same division, he's a tough competitor, and he would pull for his team, and I was a pull for mine. And if there was any kind of friction, then we both responded based on protecting our own families. And it was real emotion And as long as it didn't get personal, it was not a problem.
All right, sabermetrics versus gut. Somebody said toward the end of your career, obviously the sabermetrics were more prevalent, but you still got a gut. You've been doing it a long time. How did you balance that towards the end?
That's another subject that we could do and probably have to do several times during the course of the season, because it is the number one hot button issue in our game today. And that is how you blend all the mathematical analysis, the metrics, with the expertise of coaches and scouts. You know, we call it observational analytics, what you learn from watching and actually hands-on trying to improve. Quick background on it is because I was such a lousy player and didn't have much experience. The whole career and our coaching staff, we totally embraced information. So for years, we were the, you know, we were the darlings of the sabermetrics guys, because we actively were engaged in trying to get information. And Duncan especially was very, very creative. He actually pioneered a lot of stuff that's happening now on the pitching and positioning side. But where we are now is that they got a big foothold, and increasingly they're kind of overwhelming the traditional or old school part of the game. And to where I stand, I think it's very important to recognize the impact and the information asset that they can be. But once you start trying to take the science and beat up the art side, because when you're down there and you're coaching, you know, you see things, and the adjustments that you make, the way you bring along a guy, the way you judge a guy's heart and his guts and his toughness, those things are not part of a formula. So it is a balance of science and art. And what you can't do, and this is happening too often in some organizations, the science is overwhelming and disrespecting the art. And it's one thing I enjoy so much about the Red Sox with Dave Dombrowski as our leader. They really do a good job of science and art respecting each other, and they make sure that the guys in uniform have the authority and the responsibility to activate the information in terms of how the game is going that day.
So many great emails. We appreciate everybody getting involved. TonyTalkQuestions@gmail.com. Here's a lighter one. Your favorite Journey song. You're known as being a rock guy, music guy, and also Bay Area. Can you pick a favorite Journey song?
I think I pick them all. Tied for first. There are so many of them. As soon as you hear the first chords, you know, you like this one. I don't know if I like one more than the other. The one that you hear most often, you know, in ballparks is always kind of inspirational. But, you know, it's not as good as Queen's You Are the Champion. I mean, that's still my favorite.
Also, a friend of Tony update. I didn't do my homework. I apologize. It's this story. I'm going to look it up. Bruce Hornsby beat Allen Iverson in basketball, but it had me thinking. They would just say, Horns is here. Horns is here. How did you guys become friends?
Rex Hudler, you know, an old Cardinal, was with the Angels. And Rex and I had never were our teammates together, but we had mutual respect. And he mentioned Bruce Hornsby. And I had literally in 1996, when I joined the Cardinals, went to spring training in St. Louis. One night, Bruce and the Range were at a joint. And I went there with one of the coaches, probably Dave McKay, and sat in the back and watched them, and then just left. So I'd always been a fan of his work. And then he introduced us, and that kind of struck it up, and the friendship. And for years, he would come to spring training. He'd bring his twin boys. You know, Mark was always very superstitious. It seemed like whenever the Hornsby twins were there, he hit home runs. So to this day, you know, we still remain friends. In fact, this past January, we did Stars for Rescue 28. He and Christian McBride did a big jazz thing. So, you know, he's been a very good friend. He's a big fan of sports, basketball especially, but he is a genius musically.
And we encourage folks to check out ARF, Animal Rescue Foundation. Thought here, and again, we could probably do it. We'll do a whole show on ARF, and I've been lucky enough to be out to the headquarters there. The Pets with Vets is something, though, that's really taken on a life of its own. Tell folks just a little bit about that.
So the timing is perfect, Martin, because April 2nd, while we were playing the A's, we had groundbreaking. The first private facility, totally funded by, you know, our supporters with no tax money or government other funding. We're building the first private facility for veterans with PTSD and their dogs it's going to be a kind of a community center and training facility. And the reason we did that was that 7 years ago, you know, ARF had always had that complementary mission to go along with people rescuing animals, animals rescuing people. And we kept putting with different types of folks that could use the unconditional love. Like if you're in the hospital or if you're a senior away from your parents, or if your kids, you know, battered women, abused kids. I mean, there's all kind of a lot of education. So we started putting dogs with veterans of PTSD. In fact, we have a slogan that says it's saving lives at both ends of the leash. And we thought it was going to be successful. It's kind of gone, you know, exploded. Here we are in our seventh year. We've got about 600 matches and a waiting list. So we decided that we had to do more. And the more is that we started construction on this about an 8,000 square foot building where the veterans are going to have the privacy. And the beautiful part about it is that we expect that around the country, many organizations, nonprofit organizations, are going to replicate our footprint, including one in St. Louis, for example. And we'll take care of a lot more veterans that way.
Very cool. And again, we'll keep people updated on all events related to ARF. It's Tony Talk on ScoopedWithDannyMac.com. It's presented by Triad Bank, Marie Davila Senior Living, and Greenville University. I'll finish with just your blink, a real quick one. I'll just give you a random former Cardinal. It is Redbird Roulette. And I'm just, top of my head, this name came to mind. Hector Luna. What's your blink when you remember? You had so many players over the years. Give me a quick thought on Hector.
Hector was a guy that joined our club as a young talent. I mean, he really could run, you know, good sized kid, but he could run, had a good live bat. And he was just young, and we tried to have him grow up in a hurry. And, you know, he did some good things for us. I think if he could have stayed with us and could have been developed thoroughly, I think he could have had his talent meet fruition. But he was a talented guy who really helped us at a young age.
Tony, great to talk to you. We'll do it again next week.
I'll look forward to it. Thank you.